What's up, military millionaires? Today's episode is awesome. Alex Felice is my co-host again, and we interview Steve Rosenberg of Mind Property Management Group and of the Mindful Investor Podcast, as well as a guy who lost his job after being a pilot in September 13th, 2001. He got furloughed, became a real estate investor, and done everything from flipping houses and wholesaling to buy and hold rental properties to building a property management company with over 1,000 doors under management, and he's still a pilot. This is just an awesome, awesome episode, and I'm so glad to bring it to you guys. Definitely tune in. As always, show notes are found at frommilitarytomillionaire.com/podcast. Now relax and enjoy the show.
You're listening to the Military Millionaire Podcast, a show about real estate investing for the working class. Stay tuned as we explore ways to help you improve your finances, build wealth through real estate, and become a person that is worth knowing.
Hey guys, if you're looking to take your investing, business, life, or just yourself to the next level, then I have something for you. The War Room Real Estate Military Mastermind Group is a mastermind group that meets weekly in small groups of 5 to 6 people to help you hold yourself accountable and really experience that growth. But we also have a monthly guest speaker that we bring in, and we've had guest speakers that talk about mindfulness, taxes. We're bringing in somebody to talk about marketing. We bring in very specific topics that will adhere to very broad, any kind of real estate investing or entrepreneurship that you want to do, and will really help you out. We let you ask these speakers questions and get very personal with them. And then back to the small groups, weekly accountability for what you're trying to achieve and just being surrounded by like-minded people. And they say your network is your net worth. I know that's an overused phrase, but I recommend that you check it out. So just shoot an email to wrmastermind@gmail.com. Once again, that's wrmastermind@gmail.com, and we'll send you some more information.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dave from the Military Millionaire Podcast, and I'm here with my originally temporary and now semi-permanent co-host Alexander Felice, who I'll let introduce himself real quickly.
Happy to be here again. I'm going to try my best not to take over your show completely today.
That's not an introduction at all. Here we were complaining that I wasn't introducing you, and I give you a chance to introduce you, and you say, thanks, nothing about
last time.
So
last
Alex
time
was an Army veteran. Hello. He's an Alex, an Army veteran who has bought, I don't know, like 8 burrs and then a 24 unit, and now he's trying to buy some other stuff that we can't talk about yet. But anyway, but we're here with Steve Rosenberg today, who is the VP of Investor Education for Mind, but also an airline pilot, a podcast host, an investor, and just a cool guy that I got to hang out with at Bigger Pockets Conference this year. And he's got some pretty cool stories. So this is going to be an exciting episode. We were talking about this on Instagram and decided that we were going to do some podcasting. So Steve, thanks for joining us this evening.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you guys having me on today.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I had a property management company. I recently sold that. But if you step back a little bit further, I am an airline pilot, born and raised in Los Angeles, and wanted to always fly planes, didn't know anything else. So went the civilian route. Actually, when I wanted to go in the military route, that was back in the Clinton days, and they had said they were cutting so many flight slots, and the guy was like, you probably won't fly. Probably better off going civilian. I didn't know anything different, so went that route. And ended up getting hired with the major airlines. I was 25 years old, and which is pretty young for that time, but I really didn't know anyone in the business or in the industry. So I just kind of did what I did and just kind of kept grinding it out and applied. And finally, I think they just got tired of hearing me and seeing my resume. So I think they finally gave me a shot and got hired with Continental in 98. And prior to that, I was flying with TWA on the up and down the East Coast of the US. Got hired with Continental and was based in Guam, actually. Flew out of Guam, all over South Pacific, Micronesian Islands, all that stuff for a couple years. And August of 2001, I moved to Houston. So I was living in Orange County, but that's not a, they don't have a pilot base in Orange County. So went to Houston. That was August. And up until September 10th, I would have probably said I had the best job in the world. Didn't want to do anything else. Never wanted to own real estate. Never wanted to be a speaker. I did what I want. I was doing what I loved doing. And, you know, the consensus was, if you get a job as an airline pilot, you're set for life. You don't need to worry about it. You know, act to Congress to get you fired because they got strong unions and all that stuff. And so I was real happy. And obviously 9/11 hit. And that was kind of my understanding of the real world. And on September 13th, I got delivered a furlough notice. So it went from this safe, secure job that within 72 hours basically was told, we don't know if you're going to need, we don't even think we're going to need you anymore. We're basically, as a company, we're protecting the shareholders and the contracts. So we're going to abrogate all your contracts. We will wipe out your pensions. You will take a pay cut or you will just get furloughed. And there's really nothing you can do about it. And if you get furloughed, you're going to be on the street with another 100,000 pilots. So good luck. And, you know, when you're in an industry like oil or tech or something like that, and that happens, you know, you can see it coming. You can be like, oh man, there's going to be layoffs. Something's going to happen. Well, obviously when 9/11 happened, it was like ripping off a Band-Aid. And all of a sudden, you know, you got everything going on with 9/11 and the airlines and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, man, like, okay, what would I do? If I don't have a job, what would I do? And so started looking at other jobs that existed out there. And I realized that I was so specialized in being a pilot that I couldn't do anything else. Like, I wasn't even certified to drive a truck because I didn't have any qualifications. And I'm thinking, I can fly this tube around in the sky with hundreds of people, but I can't do anything else. Like, I'm so specialized. So then you realize that that safe, secure job is actually not very safe and secure. It's actually the opposite. I was in that corner that I couldn't do anything. And I was like, okay, I need to do something just in case. And I ended up getting about 30 from the bottom of a 6,000 pilot seniority list. And while this was going on, I got pushed out of Houston and I was flying out of Newark and Cleveland and hopping around. And you know, I'm not complaining because I got a job, you know, and you know, we had to take like a huge pay cut and all the, you know, contract stuff. Company took advantage of a lot of things, but you know, that's how it is. And I started realizing, like thinking like, okay, what do people do? Like, what would I do? I didn't want to quit flying because I loved it, but I also knew any other hiccup, because we had, I don't know if you remember, we had like the foot and mouth disease going on. We had SARS, they had the oil prices. I mean, it was like, we would joke that the locusts were going to come next for us because it was like everything they could do to make the airlines not work. And I ended up looking and seeing that like a lot of people were tied to real estate. And I was like, that's interesting. And a lot of people that, you know, a lot of pilots that were flying and they had rentals here, rentals there, some good, some bad, you hear stories. And I'm like, maybe I'll give that a shot. So I started reading about real estate.
What year is this, Steve? Was it?
Yeah, this is about, I mean, this was right after 2001. So this is about 2002. You know, I mean, I'm like, you know, because I'm thinking, oh, shit, man, I'm not going to have a job. You know, I got a family. Well, not family, I had a wife. Just moved to Houston. Like, I don't know anyone here. It's like, what am I going to do? So I ended up just learning that real estate, wow, this is interesting. So I started reading a book. And, you know, back then, not really much internet. So I did what, you know, old people do. I got a library card. So I go to the library and I'm you know, going to the library every week. And I started reading like a book a week on real estate. And, you know, I'm like a very competitive person. And I realized that I was like losing this game in my mind. I'm like, all these people know what's going on. And I've never even heard of these words like cash on cash return, ROI. I'm like, what does all this mean? And I thought like I was like getting in a game in the third quarter. And I'm like, okay, I got to get my head in this thing. And, you know, flying, you know, you learn a lot of stuff from being trained, you know, like, okay, I'm like, work the solution. I'm like, I got to figure out a solution to this. And the solution was, I got to fucking learn really fast. So I started just doing everything I could. And it was like, I was like, walked through a looking glass of this new society that all these people knew all this stuff. And I didn't. All these people are retired and this and that. Now, I never wanted to get rid of being a pilot. I love being a pilot, but I'm like, okay, it does have a limit. And if anything happens, they are not going to protect me. So I got to protect myself and I got to set myself up. So I got some mentor that taught me how to do like options and wholesaling. They didn't call it wholesaling back then. It was basically like double closings and stuff like that. And he showed me how to do it. And he's like, look, if you do what I say, it will work. Just do what I say. And I'm like, okay. Like, I didn't know anything about it. So I started learning how to negotiate and I took a lot of classes on negotiating and I did exactly what he said. And all of a sudden I started wholesaling, doing these double closes and flipping houses. And I did about my first year, I probably did about 12 or 13 of them, still flying, based in Newark on the phone all the time. And I had all these people come up to me like, how did you do that? You're like, you can't do that. And I'm like, I don't know. I just did like 12 of them. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know that I couldn't do it, you know? And it's one of those things, you don't know what you don't know, you know? And I started getting really successful at it. And I started getting better and better. And I started creating systems and try to make as much automation, like from flying that I learned how to automate this as much as possible. I got really good and I ended up making enough money doing that, that I bought into an apartment complex, joined a local investment club, bought into an apartment complex. And what's funny about that is it's that grass is greener theory. Everybody wanted to know what I was doing because I had these systems and I was very successful doing it. Very successful. I was successful for me. And I wanted to know how they own properties. And they're like, man, this is boring. This is like watching grass grow. Like, there's nothing fun about this. So like, you're making fast money. You're making 20, 25,000 a pop. I want to do what you're doing. And I'm like, man, but this is work. Like, if I stop, so does the business. Like, I've got to keep grinding this out all the time, but it's giving me the money to get somewhere. So anyway, so you start trading skills, right? And I started showing people how to flip these properties and stuff like that. And they showed me how to own assets and how to manage them and how to run them. Ended up doing really well on this apartment complex we owned in Houston and sold that. And me and one of the, there was four of us total in the deal. Me and one of the other guys, we were like, hey, you know, maybe we should buy some houses. You know, like, it's going pretty good. Now, just to give you an idea, this is about 2006, 2007, right? All these investors have a heartbeat or getting loans and they're buying houses. And these are the guys that I'm flipping them to. And I'm thinking, why are they so readily excited to get these houses? And then I finally, it kind of like was a light bulb going off. And I was like, you know what, man, we're playing the short game. Like, we're making 20, 25 grand a deal. They're making the long game. Like, they're going to hold these long term and make a lot more money than we are and not have to do anything. Like, we're giving to them on a silver platter. And they're like, hey, thanks a lot. I'll take another one. Cause they're getting loans with no money down and all that kind of stuff. So we're like, we should buy and hold some of these deals. And so I'm like, yeah, let's see what we got. So this is kind of where our story gets funny, sort of. My business partner comes to me and he's like, hey man, I found these deals. They're like tons of cash flow. They're really cheap to get and we can get as many of them as we want. And I'm like, okay. He's like, they're low income, high cash flow homes. The low income was right. The high cash flow was not. But I'm like, all right, well, why just buy one, man? Let's push all the chips in. Let's buy as many as we can. So in about a year, we buy about 20 of these things. And then next thing you know, we start getting these phone calls from these people called tenants. And they're calling us and they're bitching and they're moaning and they can't pay their rent and there's maintenance and this and that. And all of a sudden I'm like, what's the deal with this? Like, we didn't have this problem in the apartment complex. And he's like, well, we had an apartment manager in the apartment complex. You and I are the managers here. And so this started going on. And we, you know, of course you're buying low income houses. These are normally older properties. They need more maintenance, right? They have more issues. I'm flying still full time. My business partner is running an IT department for a large company. We're not swinging hammers, right? We're thinking passive income like the apartment complex. It wasn't, first of all. But what we ended up doing was we ended up thinking the way out of this was let's buy more. So we buy about another 15 of these things. So now we got about 40 or so, 35, 40 of these crappy homes. And it's like putting gasoline on a fire and it just explodes in our faces. Our average tenancy is about 8 months. Our make ready costs are three times the amount because when the 8 month tenant would leave, they would take a lot of parting gifts with them, like wiring and electrical and air conditioning units and all that. And it's like, we were so emotionally close to this. We just kept making bad decision after bad decision. So anyways, we end up getting this, we have this moment of truth in our life. I wrote a book on this whole deal and I talk about it in my book and it's kind of funny. I'll send you guys a copy. And the thing about the is we're like in this house trying to save money on a trash out because basically we had no more money left. And we decided to save money on this trash out. And we're trashing out this two bedroom house. And if there was any less than 1,000 cockroaches, I'd be lying. And it looked like aliens must have taken this tenant and removed her because she left everything in the house. Like, I don't know if she went to jail, died. I have no idea. But like, it was like coffee pots with coffee in it. Clothing, food, I mean, like wedding pictures, you know, you're like, is this lady like, you know, in the closet or something? And anyway, so we trash out this house, we save like $200 and we have just shit all over us, right? And my business partner's thrown up a couple times because the refrigerator. Anyways, we had a basically, that was our moment, that was our drop dead zero moment. And he's like, we are never doing this again. Like, we either fix this or we sell them all right now. So we decided to create some structure, policies, procedures. It took us about 6 months to plumb what a property management company would do. And from there, we ended up stabilizing our properties. And they never actually made us money, but they stabilized and they stopped bleeding us to death because we ran it like a business. We were no longer emotionally tied to it. We kicked out about 70% of our deadbeat tenants. And we're like, if you don't pay, you're gone. That's it. Texas is a very pro-landlord state. And so what happened was, is we had other people approach us and they're like, hey man, you know, we thought you guys were, you know, circling the toilet and you guys fixed it. What happened? And we said, well, this is what we did, told them. They're like, hey, could you manage our houses? I'm having the same problem. And we're like, no effing way, man. I do not want your problems. Like, we barely fix ours. And then we thought about it. And we're like, you know what? Maybe there's something here. Like, maybe we could scale our business through scale and have someone else's money and not ours and, you know, get some volume. So we went to a business coach. That was the first thing we did. And we said, here's what we did. Here's what we have. Do we have a business? And he looked at everything and he's like, yeah, you guys have a business. Whether you guys are smart enough or not to run it is anyone's guess. Based on what you've done so far and running your other business, you're not. And you probably will fail in 6 months. So basically the guy was a good closer. So he closed us on the spot. So we hired him right there as our business coach. And we had him for about 7 years as our coach, every week going to see him week after week, getting our asses kicked one side and the other, walking out, feeling like you're 2 inches tall. And we learned how to run a business though. And we scaled our company in 7 years from like zero to over 1,000 properties. We ran it in 3 different cities. We created policies, procedures, structure. We outsourced all the low level tasks into different places, different countries, Mexico and other places to get the best scalability with payroll to be able to run the business. We created systems that other countries actually were looking at because we ran a lot of things through online checklists and systemization. I did that through the airline, my airline background. He did it through his IT. So we kind of combined our forces and, we were well known and basically we learned how to run each other where I was kind of the visionary and he was the integrator. So I was doing a lot of speaking. I was traveling around the country. I did a couple of tours in Australia speaking as well as the US. And then we got approached by Mind recently and basically joined forces with them, Mind Property Management. And basically they purchased us. And now I am their investor of education where I speak and travel for them, working with investors, educating investors and all that kind of stuff. So that is my story.
You've got a lot to unpack, my friend.
I know, man. I know.
Which way to start at.
I know. I'm with you.
My favorite part of the story is the one that I think, well, right in the beginning. So Steve has this job that is supposedly safe and secure, right? And this applies to so many people. It applies to me. That's why I got started in real estate. I said, look, man, I need to have my own thing. And it has to be kind of passive. And so the very start of this story I really liked, and I think a lot of people are more fragile than they think, where they have one point of failure. And they might think it, especially if you're living week to week, you know, you're living week to week, maybe you like it, maybe you hate it. But if you're living week to week and then God forbid you lose the job you think is supposedly so safe, now you're in a world of hurt. And it doesn't get better, as you've noticed, it doesn't get better with speciality, right? It gets worse. Then you're like, we don't need that job anymore at all, whatever the case.
Yeah.
So I love that. I know that was right in the beginning, but that's my favorite part of that story because I think that's where so many people either recognize their situation or they're coming to that situation where they're like, man, if I lose this, you know, if you're in the army or whatever, you really can't lose your job, but it's like, yeah, but now you got to stay in.
DUI, and it's all gone.
Yeah. And I tell people like, I still fly. Like I probably didn't tell you guys, I'm down in Sydney, Australia right now. So I did a trip. I'm down in Sydney. I love what I do. I still fly. Like I fly a 787 for United Airlines and people are like, why do you do it? I'm like, well, first of all, I fly a 787 to Australia. Why wouldn't I? But you know, I'm like, I like to me, you know, to get to this point in my career, like I wouldn't want to quit. I love flying airplanes, but I also realize it's a job and it could leave at any point. So I don't have this illusion that this couldn't happen to me. If another attack happens or something happens, God forbid, you know, a swipe of a pen, it could be a merger. It could be a liquidation of the airline. I mean, anything could happen. you realize how vulnerable you are. And that's the point is when I talk to people and I have a passion to try to help people because nobody helped me, you know, and I had to figure it out on my own. And you know, the illusion, and I say illusion because it really is. I mean, we're taught and trained to, hey, go get a job, get a mortgage, you know, get a car payment, basically go get in debt so that now you have to work the rest of your life to pay it off. Go get school loans. Now you got to work the rest of your life to pay it off. And that's fine. I got nothing against that, but at least understand what you're doing and know that nothing is safe. Nothing is secure. And I mean, I like I tell people, I fly with guys all the time and they're like, oh, this is all I do. And they're like, what do you do? I'm like, I don't even know where to begin with this conversation. But I do realize that, you know, for all the people watching this, I mean, man, yeah, the military is safe and secure. I get that. But it's also the most unsafe, unsecure, because you can't really unpack your natural ability to do what you do. And that to me is that's the key to all this is if you can dig deep inside yourself and really imagine what am I good at? What do I like doing? And unpack that to do what you want. That I think is the key. And they, you know, the old Robert Kiyosaki, you know, mind your business, work your day job and start growing your business on the other side, which is what I did, you know?
So the most important question here before Alex asks something all serious and boring is, are you the kind of airline pilot who sits on an airplane and cracks jokes and makes the flight interesting? Or are you the seatbelt lights on, sit down, seatbelt lights on, rah, guy?
You know what, man?
Ultimately what matters.
Well, what's funny is most flights I do are international, kind of long haul, overnight. And most people, like when I'm in the back and I'm flying, traveling long haul, the last thing I want is someone waking me up. So we normally don't say much because it's like, you know, like last night, I mean, I just landed this morning, actually. It was a 17 and a half hour flight nonstop from Houston. We take off at 9:30 at night and we don't land here till, you know, cross the date line. We don't land here till 7 a.m. 2 days later. So it's night the whole way. The last thing someone, you know, what are you going to say? You know, hey, if you could see off to the right, you'll see Hawaii, and left you could see, but it's dark, so you're not going to see it. Nobody wants to know. They've got the map. They know what they're doing.
This is
there's no joke long. That you can tell that's good enough that waking somebody up after on a 17 hour flight makes it worth it.
There's only so much Benadryl.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Or movies. They're like, hey, you stopped the movie. Why are you stopping the movie? Like that's or there's no internet.
So as a pilot, you'll appreciate this, and then we'll get back to serious stuff. But when I left Afghanistan in 2010, Kim Jong-il or whatever in Korea was going crazy, so we couldn't fly that way, and I was stationed in Okinawa. So we flew. Yeah. So we went to Kyrgyzstan. We flew from Kyrgyzstan to Germany to Newfoundland to Alaska to Tokyo to Okinawa, Japan. And it was like 46 hours,
ouch.
And it was like one time that we got off the plane. It was in Germany, and that was why we never got off the plane again, because it was like, oh, hey, look, absinthe and stuff. And anyway, but it was the most miserable experience. I mean, at some point, like, you just, what am I supposed to do? I can't sleep. I can't move.
Tired of sitting.
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah. Anyway.
Steve, let me ask a question. How do you, you know, I think what a lot of people find struggles with is how to balance their day job, which we all, like you said, the system is designed where you kind of figure out that you don't want to be in the system after you're already in it. And so I got a day job, I got obligations. I can't just quit, right? I got to figure something else out on the side. So everybody has their own struggle to deal with in that regard. David's got a terrible one because he's in a skiff where he can't do any real estate work while he's at work because they got him all locked up. Other people have obviously other struggles, but a guy like you, you don't know what it's like. You got a 17 hour flight. Is that a lot of time that you get to work on real estate?
Yes, it is. I mean, for me, imagine being in a library for 17 hours, you know, so you know, you have that focus and you're quiet. But to answer your question, my personal belief is there's no such thing as a balanced life. I think you have to be all focused and all in one direction, and then you got to pivot, and then you got to go the other direction. So I think that in my opinion, that when you're doing something, you got to go all in. Now you can maybe set quick goals. It's like sailing, right? You got to go this way, this way, this way. You can't just go in a straight line, like flying a plane, right? You're always correcting. I don't think that there's a way to balance it. I think you have to go hard in one direction. And when you're ready, you turn and pivot and go the other way. So when you're working and you're doing stuff, when you're working your day job, you work your day job, you know, and I think the reality is, I think everybody wants to feel all warm and fuzzy to say, oh, this is good. You got to have this and you got to have family time and this and that. That's true to a point. But at some point, you got to say, okay, am I willing to give up sleep? Am I willing to do what I have to do to make it work for a year, 2 years, 3 years? I don't think a lot of people are. I think a lot of people say they are, you know, but they, I don't think they really will, because I mean, something simple is working out. You know, I hear a lot of people, they're like, how do you go to the gym? I'm like, well, I get up at 4 a.m. and go, oh, I could never do that. I'm like, you can't or you won't. There's a difference. Mm. You can if you wanted to. You could go, you know, multiple hours if you wanted to. You choose not to. You know, so I think it's, I mean, I'm married. I've got a family. I have a son. You know, I integrate that stuff as much as possible. But when I'm working, I'm working. You know?
I think you just became Alex's favorite person by using the word pivot. But I mean, to put that in perspective, not to like, not for boasting things or whatever, but it is 11:30 at night and Alex is recording. You just got off a 17-hour flight and it's going to be 11 before I go to bed and I'll be up at 3:55 tomorrow morning. So
yeah, you do what you got to do, right?
The balance is, okay, how do I fit everything in here and hope it doesn't fall?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I don't think there is balance. I think it's a matter of, I think you got to go hard and full in, and when it's done, or when you set, you know, you got to set parameters, right? I mean, I get parameters, and you got to have a place to go. And for Alex, we got to pivot. But you know, I think that's the key. I mean, I just think intention and focus is everything. Because if not, you know, instead of being the depth of a water well, we're the depth of a size of a can of tuna, and you get nothing done. You're like, you're the guy who does a lot of things but doesn't accomplish anything. Like, I'd rather be full in, full tilt. And when that's done, whenever that mini task is done, you turn, you know, and that's just how I operate.
That's so much how my personality, Steve, a very obsessive, kind of addictive. Yeah. And then I think you're lucky, and not everybody's as lucky in that you can tell, it seems, and maybe some of it is a wisdom and experience thing. Like, it's easier to go all in on something when you know you like it, and then you know it fits your biology. So a lot of people, they do is they try to fit these artificial ambitions that were created them by society and the internet. And they're like, I want to go do that because it seems neat. It's like, it doesn't fit your biology. It doesn't fit your personality. And so you said, well, I went through all these different businesses and I found out, you know, I need an active business and I need a passive business and those kind of, and you chose ones that fit your personality. And I think part of that, what you're saying is, you know, it's okay. It's much easier to go all in on something when you're like, this works. I like it. And I almost would do it without the money, right? Like, it seems like you fly without the money. It's like, oh, it's easy to go all in.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's a very good point and very valid. And like, what I try to tell people is, like, you know, when it comes to doing this or real estate or anything, you know, like, nowadays, like, you know, maybe I'm older, I'm wiser. I've been mentored and coached for years. And, you know, I get a lot of military guys that will reach out to me and ask me, like, hey, I'm getting out of the military. Should I go the airline route? I saw you on Bigger Pockets. You know, you kind of have some in between. What should I do? And my first question to them is, what's your goal? Like, what do you want to do? Like, let's just say at the end of the horizon, when you retire, when it's all said and done, what does your life look like? Like, do you have assets? Are they producing? Do you not care? Do you want to sit on a beach? Like, let's go to the end and work it backwards. And so, you know, I could tell you what to do, but I'm only going to give you advice of what I would do. Like, and it's like real estate. Like, a lot of people ask me, what should I do? And I'm like, why would you ask me? Like, what do you want? And then you take advice. Like, cause you're just going to be like me. You're gonna be like, fuck, I'm at the gym every day. I don't even work out. Like, now I'm learning to fly a plane. I'm like, well, that's what I do. You ask me what you should do, I'm telling you what I do. So it's like, tell me what you want and then take advice and you take that information and then you pivot on it. Then you make decisions on that based on that. But I mean, I think the biggest challenge with a lot of people, and I can't speak for military, but I just, a lot of people in real estate and in business, they're waiting to be told, like, what this magic button of knowledge is. Like, what should I do, Steve? I'm like, I don't know what you should do. Like, what do you want to do? Like, you know, someone make a decision. You know, it's like, what do you want and what does your life look like? And then you mold it around that. Like, I can't tell you what to do because I don't know who you are or what you want. You know, you tell me and I'll give you advice based on what you want.
Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/militarymillionaire. Now, why Audible? Audible content includes an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more from the leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, and entertainers. I listen to Audible every single day on my commute to and from work. Now, to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/militarymillionaire.
I think, and you said you can't speak for the military, but the military is great at a lot of things. And it really is. And I love the military, but the military is definitely great at, they teach initiative, but
at the end of the day, if you do nothing, somebody will come along and tell you what to do. And I'm not going to say that it breeds that, because obviously there's a whole lot of benefits that the military does have, but I see a lot of people exit the military and it's like, they just kind of like, okay, now what?
To be fair, the military's objective is not for people to succeed as individuals. It's for people to succeed as a group, which has extreme value, but then you get out. And I think everybody who gets out of the military is guilty of this to some degree. And I only say most because I'm sure there are a select few who don't, but people struggle with individuality. Like Steve said, it's like, what do I want to do? It's like, I have no idea. I just spent the last X amount of years being told what to do, and I was successful at it. I have no idea what I would do if I was, you know, driving the ship.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's a good point, because I'm assuming the military in general, for the masses, they don't want people to go off on their own and say, I'm not doing that, that's stupid, I'm doing this. They want conformity. They want you to do what you're supposed to do.
That's the opposite of what they want. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, I can see that. But like, I was talking to a guy, reached out to me, and I think it was in Fort Rucker, flying helos in the Army. And he's like, yeah, I'm getting out. I'm thinking of getting out. I'm not sure. And he's like, I said, well, give me a call, man. Well, let's talk, you know? So he gave me a call, we were talking. He's like, man, they're willing to give us money to transition to fixed wing. And then I can go that route into the airline. He's like, but I don't know if I want to. And I'm like, you know, I told him, I said, here's my opinion of this. You know, life is like a book, right? And I was taught this by someone a long time ago, much smarter than me. And, you know, at some point chapters end, you know, and other chapters begin. I said, you can't carry that chapter over, but you can finish that chapter. So if you don't want to be in the military anymore and that's the end of the chapter, can you carry anything over? Meaning, if they're willing to pay you and give you money or stipend to go get fixed wing, and that's where you go. I said, you know, it's very rare to have this opportunity. And I said, once you say no and that chapter ends, you can't go back to that chapter. So you leave the military, you don't take that option. I go, they're giving you that. I go, when you get into the real world, you're not going to be given these things. Like, it's going to be like, what do you have? You know, what do you offer? What do you do? I said, so to me, you've got nothing to lose by giving it that route. And then you make the decision based on being there. But I said, just to say no now, because you think you want to be you want to do real estate and stuff like that, you don't know how that'll play out. And I said, how many houses are you going to buy? You know, I said, what are you going to do? I said, once you have 15, 20 houses, what are you going to do? You know, I said, if you're an airline pilot, at least you can facilitate that, or you can make the decision if you want to. I said, you're in a very select few of people, the population that has this ability. And I said, And to your point, Alex, I said, don't they teach you that? I said, is there any education? And he's like, man, we're in a bubble. He goes, we don't know any of this stuff. And I was like, okay, I didn't know. And I said, and that's why I started trying to help out and reach out to military guys saying, hey, if you want some advice or some help, real estate, flying, I mean, I can tell you what I know. I mean, I'm definitely not an expert at it, but I'm happy to help, because again, nobody helped me. And I'm sure it's even worse when you're in that bubble, you know, not knowing, like, what do the airlines pay? Are the airlines good or the airlines bad? What should I do? You know, that kind of stuff.
So there is a transition readiness seminar of 1 week that you get to do right before, within the last 2 years you're in the military. But as far as I haven't been through it, Alex is probably better for answering this, but from what I've gathered from everyone I've talked to, and I'm getting ready to go through it here in a couple months, is that it's essentially a fire hose of information. And then you're like, okay, I retained some of that. I hope I can figure it out.
Yeah. Well,
there's it's directly against the military's objective to help people get out.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not rocket science. You just, why would they help you go be successful without them? I mean, they have some things in place, and you should be grateful for that, but it's like, you know.
No, it makes sense.
Counterproductive for them. And also, Steve, what you were saying earlier, like, you know, I think right now, especially with the mania of real estate, that there's this glamour ideology about like, oh, I'm just going to buy real estate and I'm going to retire in a few years and it's perfect. And it's like, you know, you might hate that too. I know a lot of people that are in real estate right now. And it's like, dude, it's easy right now because real estate's gone up. As soon as it gets hard, I know people that are going to be jumping ship left and right. They're like, wait, I don't like this when it makes money. When it starts losing money, I am out of here.
I tell you what, man, I've been on both sides. You know, anyone that's been around like since the recession, we'll just say back then when it hit the fan, which there's not many people that, you know, I realized that a majority of the people came in, you know, after that fact. And I tell people, I'm like, it's a pendulum, man. It swings both ways. And like when it reminds me of the .com, when I remember the .com, I was like in New York and this taxi cab guy's giving me tips on stocks. And I'm like, what's this guy doing? Give me, you know, like whatever. I didn't think anything about it. And then it crashes. Right. Well, when I see guys that are owning real estate for 1 or 2 years and they're doing these apartment syndications, I'm thinking this is going to go like, this is the domino effect. This is the standard thing that happens when all of a sudden people don't know what they're doing. And I tell people, they're like, oh man, when are you going to get into apartments? Like, when are you going to graduate? And I tell people, you know what? Let me tell you something. Yes, you can make more money and you add more zeros on the pluses, but when things go wrong, you better be ready to add a lot more zeros and pluses on the negative side. Because when it goes, when that pendulum swings the other way, man, that force is huge. And I know a lot of people that have just lost everything that they've ever made in their whole life because they didn't know what they were doing and they got into something. And I tell people, I'm like, be very careful. It's like a weapon, however you want to analyze it. It can be very, very dangerous. And, you know, when I had my properties and I talk about it in my book, like, man, I mean, we had a hurricane come through. Hurricane Ike came through Houston. I lost like 20 roofs. The houses were flooded. And I'm thinking to myself, man, like, where are these people going to live? And this and that. And all of a sudden I thought, wait a second, if they can't live in my houses, they can't pay rent. If they can't pay rent, how am I going to pay my mortgages? Uh-oh, I got a bigger problem. And now, you know, and the one thing I'll say to people, again, like you said, everyone thinks it's glamorous. But when you put yourself in a bad position, like I did, I put myself in a very bad position, and you cannot fix it. And the stress and the sleepless nights and the mental strain, I would not wish that on anyone. And because I did it to myself, it's not like, oh, somebody hit my car. I mean, I physically put myself in this position. And my wife, it got to the point that my wife was like, if you buy another house, it better be nice because you'll be living in it because you suck at buying houses. You are no good at this. You are not getting good stuff. And I'm like, no, I can fix this. She's like, I'm doing the books. I can tell you, you are not making this any better. And then I had to deal with the repercussions of it. So again, like you said, it can, that pendulum, man, it is ruthless.
Everybody who's buying right now because of low interest rates, artificially low interest rates, and they're getting in because the liquidity is high and they have low equity and they bought a deal at retail and the thing is low cash flowing and they have low reserves, like just recognize, like Steve's saying, like it's working because the economy is working. And just like the airline, you know, things can change in a cocaine heartbeat. Right? And it's like, you don't know. I mean, if you're watching, there's a lot of things on the horizon right now to say, like the thing, like real estate right now is as good as it's going to be for, I mean, it's good. And you're right. There's a pendulum. And, you know, prepare for that, the day that it's not so glamorous, because real estate's a long game, if nothing else, especially rentals. It's like you signed a 30-year mortgage. I know people that have 10, 15, 20, 30-year mortgages, and they're not 30 years old yet. They know not what they do.
Yeah, very true. And it's like you said, it's a great, you know, what I try to tell people is owning real estate is not the goal. Flipping, wholesaling is not a goal. Like when I talk to people, I'm like, what are your goals? They're like, I want to own 10 houses. I'm like, that's like saying I'm going to get on the freeway. First thing I'm going to ask you is, where are you going? Because getting on the freeway is not a goal. Getting somewhere on the freeway is a goal. And I'm like, getting on, you know, buying houses, flipping, these are strategies. These are vehicles to get you to a destination. And so a lot of people have to understand that when you owning real estate, stocks, all that stuff, that's not the end result. It's what that's giving you is the end result. And that's something that I think is the illusion. A lot of people think it, like you said, it's very glamorous, HGTV, flipping, this and that. It's like, man, you get down and dirty doing this. It's not fun, you know? And again, that's just the vehicle to get you somewhere. So I tell people, I'm like, if you ask me directions, what's the first thing I am going to ask you? It is, where are you going? When you ask me, what kind of houses should I buy? I'm going to go, where are you going with this? Where's the destination? If you can't tell me where you're going and you don't know where you're going, I can't give you directions. And that's the problem. We, you know, it's ready, shoot, aim, you know, and entrepreneurs, I just want to get a deal. Get a deal for what? It's like, I want to get on the freeway. I just want to get on the freeway, man. It's like, where are you going?
Well, let's just call it what it is, right? It's ego.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Also, I think you said something really important, and I think it's grossly overlooked. And again, it's an ego thing. stress. Okay. Some people deal with it well. Almost everybody deals with it badly.
I deal with stress really badly. And so from the very start of my rental, I said, you know what? I'm going to buy these little rentals. I'm going to use reasonable amounts of debt, not an extremely amount, high amount. And I'm going to keep high levels of cash reserves. Because the one thing, like you said, I don't care about houses at all. It's a fun little challenge and a hobby and it makes me money. But really, it's like, hey, what I really wanted to do is reduce all of the financial stress in my life. That's what I really want the houses for. Not to go online and tell you how many I have. It's like, it's a mechanism to reduce stress in my life. So now, anytime that I find myself getting a little too ambitious, a little too big for my britches, right? And what happens is I start to notice that the deal starts stressing me out. It's like, this is counter to my goal. I stop. I'll drop that deal. I'm not going through with it. It's like, if the goal is to not be stressed out, it's reduce stress, and then you sign up for something that makes you miserable. I got to manage this, you know, this 50-unit apartment building that's just tearing me apart. It's like, dude, you're working against the whole point of this.
Yeah, yeah. And I one of the things I always tell people is, when you buy a house, it's four walls, a roof, and dirt. That's it. It's that. Look, you and I know, all three of us know many people that bought four walls, a roof, and a dirt, and were very successful. And other people that bought it and it ran them into the ground. It's not the four walls, a roof, and the dirt. It's the business running inside of that. Because I can look at deals that maybe I bought that I did a horrible job running, and I sold that to someone else and they did a great job of it. The house didn't change. The business model inside of it changed. And that's what's important, is like you said, the apartment complex, anything you're doing, it's the business. It's a business, and it's a business model running inside of it. And if you don't have the right business model, which is the strategy to get you to the right goal, it doesn't matter, right? And like you said, I mean, it's a tool and it's a vehicle. And if it's created correctly and it's thought through and it's, you know, process, procedure, structure, it can run fine. But normally, like, you know, airplane crashes, it's normally pilot error, it's normally operator error that causes this thing to crash, you know?
The physics didn't change.
Or Iran. Didn't change.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that, David? Are you still here?
I just said, or Iran. I'm actually taking a note that I need to go over to my wall here where it just says 2020 goal, more units than Alex, rub in face. And I need to change that to no. So you joke about four walls, a roof, and dirt. I mean, as anyone who listens to this show knows, I took a pretty hard hit a couple months ago and I'm still dealing with it. And I basically had to pull back and say, okay, that took more of my capital than I'm comfortable with. That took more of, I didn't tap my cash reserves, but I came close. I'm not going to tap them for the next deal. So I had to step back and say, all right, well, I'm going to wait a few months before I pull the trigger on my next property, because rather than tap reserves, rather than sell a property, rather than pull equity, I'm not wanting to do that. Then I need to sit here and just play the savings game for a little bit to rebuild, to go again. And the hardest part about that is that I am hosting a podcast talking about real estate and choosing not to buy at the moment. And that's not a hard thing to do because of any reason other than every one of us has an ego somewhere in there. And even if you know it's the right decision, especially as a Marine who grew up saying, oh, we're the best, or, you know, like, we grow up in this world of like competition and whatever, that's not an easy thing for me to do, is say, hey, I need to pause for a little bit and rebuild and then continue.
Yeah, but you're right. But I would say that, you know, being smart enough to adjust your strategy takes a lot more to be able to do what you're doing, because you're basically adjusting your strategy and you're reassessing the situation, and then you're making the decision based on what's in front of you. I mean, it's like, I'll say flying an airplane, right? If I'm going from Houston to Hawaii, it's a west heading. It's a same heading west the whole time, right? Or east, sorry, wherever I'm going. West. I go so many places.
You gotta go there, then you come back.
We go to the top of the pole. We go so many different ways. But
it's clear that the computer does all the work on those places.
Yeah, exactly. but it's not a straight heading, right? We have to go, and we've got to adjust for wind and weather, and there's some thunderstorms, and we got to go over that. So we have to look at it. We could say, no, you know what? It's supposed to be a westerly heading. Let's just keep going west. And you go right into the middle of this huge thunderstorm, and you're like, why'd you guys do that? It's like, well, the plan was to go west. You can't do that, right? You got to change and audibilize and pivot all the time. And that's what I think is important to do when you're looking at it, because you don't want to drive it right into a hill saying, well, that's how it's supposed to be. So I yes, it's hard to do, but I think you're doing the smartest thing you could do, to be honest with you.
I also think it's an honorable thing to do, because what a lot of people would do in your position, they would say, I don't care what the market's doing. I'm going to sell at least the idea of real estate, and they wouldn't publicize that you're not buying any. And so you say, hey, look, here's real estate. I'm not getting any because it's not right for me. Maybe it's right for you. And so we're going to keep going with the train because that's what we're interested in. But I think it'd be very easy for you to sell out right now, and I'm glad to see you aren't.
I'm all about being honest. Everybody on this show knows that I've had some bumps in the last year or two. And when my lawsuit clears, I can't wait to post an episode where I talk all about that horror story. But
I slowed down in 2019 because house prices just got to a point where I could, but I don't, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've experienced something similar, Steve. I know you're on the property management end, but as far as the acquisition side, do you see it like, you know, it's a trap because you don't want to be like, hey, I can't buy anything that I could have bought in 2002 or 2012, right? Obviously prices are higher than that. So you want to play this game where you're like, I still want to buy in the upmarket, but I don't want to buy when it gets so bananas that I can't make any money.
Yeah, you know, and so I'm still buying. I still own stuff. I'm doing other deals as well, like some mobile home funds and stuff like that. But you know, to me, it's all the numbers. Like when people come to me in Houston and they're like, hey, I got a deal, or a bunch of wholesalers I know and stuff. I'm like, hey, I'm looking for a deal. It's the numbers dictate the deal. So I just look at the deal and I'm looking for long term. I'm a pretty conservative, lazy investor. I want to buy it, hand it over to the management company, and I don't want to deal with it. You know, one of the things I did is my son at 14 years old bought a rental, and you know, he came to me after, you know, listening and reading books and stuff like that, and he's like, Dad, I want to buy a rental property. And he saved his own money, half the down payment for it, which I don't know how he did, but he did. But we ended up going 50-50 on a rental deal, but this deal was turnkey, ready to go, you know, and it made money for the deal. We bought it, and I'm like, look, this is what you do. I'm like, get it, and we hand it over to the management company. They'll do the make ready. They'll get it going. 3 days later, it was rented. You know, once in a while, we'll hear something's going on with it, AC or something like that. But I tell them, I go, you know, part of owning real estate, a lot of us think, and we have the perception that owning real estate is a I'm the only person thing. I don't know if you guys do, that's successful in business, real estate, or anything that did it all themselves. They go, I did it all myself. I did everything, and I am this gazillionaire, and no one helped me. Everyone I know that's successful says, you know what? I have 24 hours in a day, and I'm going to leverage those hours the best I can by using team, whether it's a management company, mortgage company, title company, whatever it is. They leverage the team. And so what I'm trying to teach my son is like, look, you have a business, and you are the CEO of that business. Your job is to have people working for you as a team, giving you advice, basing your decisions on your goal, and you guys are aligned with that. I think the biggest challenge, you know, that I was going to say earlier, the biggest challenge we have as investors is that we are under the assumption that we don't have to answer to anyone. We think like, I own the house, I don't have to answer to anyone. So I talk to owners all the time, and I'm like, do you ever do KPIs? Do you ever do metrics? And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, do you measure what you're doing? Like, who do you answer to? At the end of the day, who do you write your things down in your goals for the next day? And they're like, no one. I own the property. I'm like, you don't own it. I'm like, you have shareholders, whether it's your family, whether it's the bank. I'm like, you're not running like a business. So the odds of it failing are very high. And if you don't run it and treat it like a business, it's gonna implode. And you know, I tell people the one thing I have, and I've learned this, is that in general, I would say, and I'm not saying everyone, I'll just say my opinion, is that investors, entrepreneurs are very selfish. And what I mean by that is we are so focused on learning and educating and taking it. We consume tons of information, right? Audiobooks, we go to Bigger Pockets, we do all this thing, we learn all this information. And we never pass it on to our family, to our kids, to create a legacy. All we do is we keep it inside. So you go to this conference and your wife is like, oh, he must have went somewhere. Now he's got this idea. And there's no alignment. And I talk to investors all the time. I go, do you ever have like an alignment with your family where you sit down and make sure everyone's on board? I'm not saying they got to do it with you, but is everyone on the in the same car on the same freeway going to the same destination? And the reality is they're not. And so I think a lot of us, we're running a business on our own, by ourselves. We're not including our family. We're not creating a legacy. I could give my son all of my real estate, but if he doesn't understand my why, he'll implode it and crash it quicker than I could have. And so I think it's just lessons that I've learned.
That's why most kids who inherit the family business run to the ground.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was going to say, there's some statistic out there that like by the third generation, massive wealth is always lost or something. Not always, but you know, it's kind of crazy. Yeah.
I like this idea too. And it's kind of something I've been going on. Well, to steal it actually. But you know, I'm on this kick lately about investing in real estate, not in houses, but in the real estate in people's minds. And so it's kind of like you said, it's like, hey, it's not that I want to start this business and I want to do all the work myself. It's that I want to find the 10 people who really want to do that same job. And so I find 10 people that have the same aligned goals. And so my job is to like say, hey, look, you want to start this thing and I want to start this thing and I can lead us. And so maybe you're the leader, maybe you're, you know, a part of it, or maybe everybody has their place, whatever it is. But I think that's really important. I do know some people that have done real estate on their own. I don't know anybody who's been reasonably successful, not on on any kind of scale by themselves. I just don't think it's possible.
I agree. And look, if you want to do it on your own and all that, that's great. I just think that, you know, the one thing that we don't have, the one thing that we cannot do anything with is time. We only have 24 hours in a day. So I look at people that are very successful, that have multiple businesses. And I've been mentored and coached and I've been able to, honored enough to be around some very successful people. And I really watch what they do. And the one thing they do is they say no a lot.
Dude, I love this.
And so what I've learned is that what they do is they're so protective of the time. I was with a gentleman one time. I can't say his name, but he gave me some of his time. And it was set up. And so I go to meet him and I'm all excited. And I'm thinking, oh, I wonder if we're going to spend the day together. How is this going to go? He goes, you have 12 minutes. And I'm like, 12 minutes? I'm like, I thought we were going to. He goes, listen, it's nothing against you. He said, but if I'm spending all this time with you, someone else, I'm not helping. And he goes, I can't do that. He goes, so you have 12 minutes. So of course, for 3 minutes, I'm thinking what I'm going to say. Cause I thought it was going to be like, I thought we were going to like hanging out and go to like In-N-Out or something together. And
it was not.
Yeah. Throwing snowballs at each other, you know, it wasn't like that. But but anyways, I realized, and he says, listen, and he told me, he goes, listen, man, you have got to learn to say no and you've got to protect your time. So the one thing I've learned from that is when I'm talking to people, when people want to have a meeting, what I try to, and I don't do it all the time, but what I try to do is like, okay, what is the outcome we want to have from this meeting? And what is it you want from me as a result? So if we can do this in 10 minutes or 2 minutes, we're doing it and we're done. And he's like, you've got it. And again, so I look, and going back to successful people, that's what they do. They say no and they protect their time. So I don't know anyone that says, hey, you know, I've got nothing better to do. I'll just, you know, I mean, they may want to do it for philanthropy or stuff, but in order to be successful in what you're doing, you've got to leverage other people. I mean, I had a company, we managed 1,000 properties, and I was able to travel around and do stuff and speak because the business was running from leverage and team and staff, you know?
And there's so much I could unpack with the power of saying no, right? Like that's just a powerful, powerful concept. However, what led you into that was talking about time. And I know that we are running a little long on the timeline podcast.
I can listen to Steve Rosenberg talk all night though, just so we're all clear.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Steve's saying was I got 45 or 50 minutes unless the conversation flows. So since we're going over, I guess it's all right, but
yeah.
So sure. I got a few questions I got to ask. The first one, being 18 to 20-year-old was to walk up to you asking for advice for real estate or life or whatever. What would be the one thing that you would tell them?
I would say, you know, really figure out your end destination, you know, really, really sit and think, how do you want your life to look? And you may not know what that is and it could change. But realize that anything you do is kind of like a tape recording that's going to play out in a direct reflection of your life and where you're going with that. So really try to figure out your why, if possible, and stick and be true to that and really stick to that and make that like your North Star and really go to that and don't deviate and don't definitely never, ever let someone give you their advice as to what you should or shouldn't do. Do what you know, learn, educate, and focus on where you're going.
I like it. I think that's critical for sure. What is one resource, book, course, website, you know, whatever that you would recommend to anybody looking to get started in real estate investing?
Oh man. Oh boy.
There's only like three to choose from.
Yeah. you know, one book that I would say had a very big impact on me was the Grant Cardone 10X book. It really just made me think bigger, because to me, owning real estate and all that stuff, you know, that, if you don't have your why, the how is easy. You know, if you got to have your why as to why you're doing something, it's like, we're going to the moon. Everyone said, how are you going to do it? First, you got to have the why. Why are you going to the moon? Once they have that, everything else comes. Like owning real estate, having money, all that comes. You got to have your why, because when, like Alex said, when the shit hits the fan and things go wrong, you've got to have that. And 10X really helped me understand the why you want a 10X, why you want to grow. So to me, that had a big impact on me.
Clearly, they wanted to go to the moon so that we could spend the next 70 years trying to figure out how they faked going to the moon.
Yes. Well, there's that, of course.
all right. So before we wrap this up, where can people get a hold of you?
Sure. Well, they can find me on Instagram, Rosenberg Steve. So it's R-O-Z-E-N-B-E-R-G, Steve. There you see me doing a lot of pictures of flying and all that kind of videos and stuff like that. Also, if you find me on Facebook, Steve Rosenberg. And I have got a Facebook group. It's the Mastermind, M-Y-N-D, Mastermind Real Estate Investment Club. And if they want to know about property management with Mind, Mind is in 16 markets. They've got software that help investors actually find properties. It's like an MLS for investors, which is free, whether you're a client or not, they give it away. They're big into education. So you can go to mind.co, M-Y-N-D.co. And if you want, you can set up time to talk with me or talk with someone and they can, you know, help you. And to me, whether we're managing your properties or you know, again, like for military, I tell guys all the time, man, if you want me, reach out to me, send me a message, DM me, and I'm happy to give you my thoughts. You know, you may not like them, but I'm going to tell you how it is. And I'm going to give you the real of what I think you know, based on what you're telling me, I'm going to tell you what I think. So
that's what most service members do appreciate.
Yeah, probably.
Hey, I have to say this. I've been thinking about it the whole show. Steve, you have been on my suggested friends list on Facebook. I've been seeing your face for no less than 2 years.
Really?
And I'm like, I don't know this guy. And so I'm glad that we finally got this awkward thing. I'm going to add you and then I can get it off the suggested friends list forever. Oh my God. That's the best part of this podcast, I got to say.
There you go, brother. There you go. The way the universe works, man. Never question. Just do it.
Now you have two incredible mustaches on your friends list.
That's right. There you go.
Maybe just one.
Hey now. Hey now.
Steve, I love your energy. And I got to say, I mean, maybe a little selfish, but I feel like a lot of the things you say, I identify with. Your personality and mine probably have a lot of overlap. And so I identify with your story very closely. And man, you tell it with such conviction. I just love it.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I appreciate everything you guys do and service to the country and everything. And, you know, I really enjoy talking with fellow investors. And, you know, I think there's that camaraderie. There's not many of us, right? So I really enjoy getting out there and talking and you know, helping people. And I appreciate you guys having me on the show. And I'll have to have you guys on my show. And, you know, again, let's keep going. And like I said, I think you know, when we win, we all win. You know, and I think it's an important thing to remember to help other people and help push another people up the mountain.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight, Steve. This has been a good one.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you.
Thank you for listening to another episode about my journey from military to millionaire. If you liked it, be sure to visit frommilitarytomillionaire.com/podcast to subscribe to future podcasts. While you're there, we'd love for you to rate the show, give us a review on iTunes. Now get out there and take action.